we are doing our second class on the Haggadah. I would like us to get acquainted with many of the songs tonight. The majority of the songs we're going to leave for tomorrow night, but we're going to try to familiarize ourselves with the basics of Pesach, including the songs. So what we've seen thus far is that in preparation for Pesach, we have to clean our home, clean everywhere that we frequent. That could be our dorm room, that could be our lockers, it could be our place in shul. We sell whatever chametz we might own. Every person should go to the rabbi and fill out a form, and the rabbi will sell it to a non-Jew. We search. We're going to search before we leave the dorm, and the major search is the night before Pesach, and then the morning before Pesach we burn the chametz, and we state that all chametz that we might have missed, any chametz that we own, is hereby nullified. We abolish our ownership of that chametz, and it should be hefker. And we stated the importance of thanking one's wife. We discussed the fast of the firstborns on the eve of Pesach, and that the custom is that we go and partake of a siyum. One of the things you should try to ensure now before Pesach is that your suit is ironed, washed, clean, dry clean. Like every Yom Tov, we're supposed to come in prepared after having shaved and taken a haircut. And this time it's even more pertinent because the Sfiras Omer, many people today have the custom, even Ashkenazim, that from Pesach until Lag BaOmer they don't shave or take a haircut. The ancient Ashkenazi custom is that from Rosh Chodesh till near Gimel Sivan, but today the minhag has become that most people go from Pesach through Lag BaOmer, they don't shave or take a haircut. So in honor of every Yom Tov, every one of their Gom, one is supposed to shave, take a haircut, shower. But here it's even more pertinent that you shave and take a haircut, because you won't be able to do it for the next 33 days. Those of you who wear a kittel, those who are married after their first year, so also make sure it's clean and ironed. Some of the things we need for, yeah. I don't know what I'll say to you. I don't know. Some of the things we need for Pesach. We need a Haggadah. Every person should get a Haggadah they feel comfortable with. Hopefully an English Haggadah. And we need to know the story. The idea isn't just to read the words, we have to tell the story over. We need matzah. Hopefully handmade matzah. Hopefully matzah has been made for the sake of Pesach. We're going to need 4 cups of wine for everyone who's going to attend the Seder. We need maror, that's the horseradish, or lettuce. Charotes, which we will make tomorrow night, from crushed up dates, and cinnamon, and nuts, and honey. Karpas, some vegetable to dip in salt water, preferably green vegetable that's edible, non-cooked. Salt water, ideally we don't prepare salt water on Shabbos or Yom Tov. Salt water is what's used for pickling, so we should preferably prepare the salt water before the Seder. We need food, the meal, the Seder at night, so preferably one would eat meat, not roasted meat. And we need something to lean on, a chair, a fender, a pillow, preferably a pillow. One of the major themes of the night of Pesach is Matzil Bignut Umseyem B'Sheva, that we begin with the shame of our history and we end with praise. And this is a dual nature of many of the mitzvot of the night. This is a dual theme of the night. On one hand, we do things to commemorate the times we were a slave. And on the other hand, we also do things to show that now we are no longer slaves. We're free men. Obviously, in preparation for Pesach, we have to make sure that there's no chametz in the house. And we discussed the different levels of stringency that one has to apply, the car or the kitchen table or the dishes we use to cook with. On the eve of Passover, Pesach, the morning before Pesach, people should get up early. You have to finish davening and eating the chametz. I didn't get a chance to check the calendar, but it's approximately by about 10 o'clock. And Those of you who have to partake of a siyum, make sure you know when there's a siyum. Some shuls have it every minyan and some don't. The things we prepare on the afternoon before Pesach are going to be to set the table. We want the seder to begin immediately at dark. We want the kids not to fall asleep. Prepare the pillows. And measure and prepare the cups of wine. We're going to discuss this at greater length tomorrow night when we actually measure the wine. You want to have the cups prepared and the proper amounts prepared of the matzah and the horseradish, the mara, so you know what to eat. We prepare the horseradish, we grind it on the eve of Pesach. That morning we grind it, and we prepare the charoses and the salt water. We roast the shank bone. Traditionally, the Torah says one of the things we're supposed to do Pesach by night is eat two korbanos. We have a korban chagiga, a sacrifice in honor of celebrating the day, and a sacrifice of Pesach. That's why it's called Pesach, the korban Pesach. So today we no longer have the ability to roast the korban Pesach or to make a korban chagiga. In commemoration of those two sacrifices, we roast the shank bone traditionally and cook an egg. And the shank bone that's roasted is in commemoration of the korban Pesach, which was roasted. Now, when people roast it, sometimes they put it directly on the grate, and that's a problem because the grate very often is trace. You know, we don't have fleishik and milchik grates. When you put your pot, you put a fleishik pot and a milchik pot on the same grate, and they drip, they spill over, right? So we don't eat things off the grate. If one's going to roast it, one should figure out a way of roasting it in a kosher fashion. Realistically, any two cooked things can be used. The tradition is to use a shank bone because that corresponds to the outstretched hand that God attests that He took us out of Egypt with an outstretched hand. So that's why we use that as remembrance for the Korban Pesach. And we cook an egg in commemoration of the Korban Chagiga. An egg is also used in mourning. We no longer have the Beis Hamikdash. On the night of Pesach, we have two biblical mitzvot and three, basically boils down to three rabbinic mitzvot. The biblical, the mitzvot d'oraita, are going to be to eat matzah and to recount the story of the Exodus, of leaving Mitzrayim. Those are our two biblical mitzvot tonight. Notice that the story, which takes up the majority of our time, the Magid, the telling over of the story, that is a biblical mitzvah this night. The Torah tells us four times that when our children ask us, we will tell them over how we left Egypt. In three different places, the Torah describes in four different ways how we're going to describe to our children that God took us out of Mitzrayim. We have rabbinic mitzvot. We're supposed to drink four cups of wine or grape juice, as we will discuss. We're supposed to eat the maror. Now, the Torah tells us to eat maror, but the Torah says we have to eat the maror with the Korban Pesach. When we eat the sacrifice of the Korban Pesach, we're supposed to eat it with matzah and maror. So nowadays that we don't have the Korban Pesach, we no longer have a biblical commandment to eat maror. Today our sages instituted a rabbinic commandment to eat maror. And we have the rabbinic mitzvah of reciting Hallel on this night. So again, our two biblical mitzvot are going to be to eat matzah and to recount the story of Exodus. And the three rabbinic mitzvot are the drinking the four cups of wine our sages instituted, eating the maror, and reciting the Hallel. Now, during the night, we're supposed to recline, heseba, to lean back, and this is a sign of majesty. When we drink the wine, when we drink the four cups, when we eat the matzah, we're supposed to lean back. Now, nowadays, most people don't lean back. So the question is, does this really show majesty? So one opinion says, no. It's the Raviyah. The Raviyah says, being that the aristocracy today doesn't lean back when they sit for their meals, you won't see President Bush sitting, leaning back while he's eating. So this no longer is necessary. And other opinions say that really this is always a sign of majesty. When aristocracy for the last few hundred years has ceased to lean back, that's because they forgo the sign of majesty. But everyone knows that you walk into a room and someone's leaning back and eating and drinking, it's a sign that he's a free man. Someone who's sitting and he is bound by the fact that he's being videotaped, he's not going to lean back the way I just did. Only a person who feels free, he could lean back and have his meal. So the aristocracy today forgo that, but it is still a sign of a certain element of majesty, of power. And therefore, we go with the majority opinion ordinarily, and we say that people should recline, not when we make the blessing, but when we drink the wine. Meaning, we make the blessing, Baruch Ta Hashem, Lokeinu Melech Haolam, Barei Pri Hagafen, and lean back on our left side and drink the cup. And we discussed that one of the more comfortable ways of leaning is by turning the chair to the side, so you could lean over the side of the chair. If the chair is behind you and you have to lean to your left, it's somewhat uncomfortable to lean. The custom is to have three matzahs at the table. And the basic reason is because we need two matzahs, like every holiday. We commemorate that the man fell down double on Shabbos and on holidays. So we always begin a holiday or a Shabbos meal with two pieces of bread, two loaves of bread. So therefore, on the Seder night, we're also going to have two matzahs, which are for the Lecha Mishnah, in honor of the Yom Tov. And we add a third matzah, which is going to be the middle matzah, the matzah that we break, and that is because the Torah tells us that when we recount the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, we're supposed to do it with Lechem Oni. And Lechem Oni could mean poor man's bread, or it could mean Lechem She'onin, Lechem, bread that we speak, we respond over this bread. And we apply both understandings. We say both that the bread has to be like a poor man's bread. A poor man can't always get the whole loaf of bread. He's going to have pieces of bread. And therefore we break the middle matzah. So to commemorate that this matzah is lechem oni, to give it the status of lechem oni. And over that broken matzah, we will recount the whole story of leaving Egypt. We will, so to speak, respond to the child's questions. We will be oneh. We will respond to his questions over a broken piece of matzah. And that's why we need the third matzah. Really, we should suffice with two matzahs, but we need the third one to have that broken piece of matzah. What do we have on the Seder plate? So most people are familiar with the Seder plate, the way the Agados, the standard Agados show you. They show you a picture of a Seder plate. My Agada doesn't have one. But anyone who has a Maxwell House Agada or any, maybe my Agada does have one. Just a second. They all show you the standard picture of the Seder plate, which really is, that's the way the Arizal said we should set up our Seder plate. Here you see it. We have it like, I guess, a number 5 on the die. No, not exactly. Closest to the one who's running the Seder, we have the Chazeret, and then, to the left we have the Karpas, to the right the Charoses, in the middle we have the Maror, and top left is the Beitza, top right is the Zroa, the Shankspoon. But the Shulchan Aruch really doesn't, the Ramah doesn't say to do it this way. The Ramah says we apply the basic principle of Ein Mavir Na'al Mitzvot. We have a rule that when I couldn't perform a mitzvah, I don't pass up the opportunity to perform a mitzvah. So let's say my tefillin are unwrapped, and I left them on the table the day before, and after the tefillin I have my talis. So I come to the table, and I always put my talis on first. But in order to reach my talis, I have to pass my tefillin, which are just there, ready to be done. So the halacha says, "Ein mavir na'al mitzvos." We don't pass up an opportunity to perform mitzvos. So first one would don his tefillin, and then put on the talis, because you don't pass a mitzvah. You have to pass by the mitzvah tefillin in order to reach the talis. So we say, don't do that. Put on the tefillin first. When we're setting up the plate, so we want to set it up in a way that we won't have to pass mitzvos in order to attain other mitzvos. So the Ramah says, what's the first thing you're going to do tonight? You're after Kiddush, you're going to eat the karpas, you're going to dip a vegetable in salt water. So he says, put the salt water and the vegetable closest to you. And the one of more importance is always on the right, so the vegetable is on your right, and on the left is the salt water. What's the next thing you're going to do? You're going to make a mochi. You're going to eat the matzah. So the next thing, according to the Ramah, is you have a pile of three matzahs. What comes after that? You're going to eat the maror and dip it in the charoset. So says the Ramah that after the matzahs, you have first, closest to you is going to be the vegetable and the salt water, the vegetable which will be dipped in the salt water, then the matzahs, then the maror on your right, again, because it's more important than the dip, the charoset. And then last come the two cooked things in remembrance and commemoration of the sacrifices. So you have the shank bone on the right, again corresponding to the Korban Pesach, and the kofteg on the left. But most homes you come to, people don't even know this opinion of the Rama exists, and people buy these fancy platters for Pesach, which is very nice, and the platters aren't set up this way. The platters are all set up like the Arizal. I've never seen a platter sold like it says in the Rama. So the Arizal really became the accepted minhag. That's what people do. When we make Kiddush on the night of Pesach, we also make the blessing of Shecheyonu. And we should have in mind that that blessing is not only on the festival of Pesach, but it's also on the special mitzvahs which we'll be performing tonight. Eating the matzah, the mitzvah of telling over the story. You got a question?
Since we do a bracha on Malwar, what's the reason for doing the halal sandwich?
Oh, we'll get to that. I don't think we'll get to that tonight, but we will be able to get to that. We're going to be drinking 4 cups of wine. And the idea of the 4 cups of wine is that we're demonstrating that we're free men. That's a sign of aristocracy. And Chazal didn't want us just to freely drink 4 cups of wine. Chazal aligned each cup with a mitzvah. So the first cup of wine, we're going to perform Kiddush over. And the second cup, we're going to tell over the story of Yitzhak and Shai, Magid. Now everyone has to drink 4 cups. This includes men, women, children, boys and girls. So long as they understand the story of the redemption from Egypt, they have to drink 4 cups of wine. Now, with regard to the question, can one drink wine or grape juice? There are opinions that say that grape juice is equally good. Here in Israel, I think most people drink grape juice. It is more practical to drink grape juice because Pesach night runs late as it is. And after drinking 3 cups of wine, I could tell you, in my house last year, most of the heads were down. We didn't get to finish the Seder. Guys said, "Yeah, let's continue," and guys were literally standing on their feet so as not to fall asleep. Everyone was out. We couldn't do the singing at the end of the Seder. People were just finished, and we didn't run that late. By 1 o'clock, all heads were down. How late did we go? 1:30. I don't think we went beyond that. By 1:30, all heads were drooping. So I recommended to everyone at the beginning of the Seder, don't drink 4 cups of wine. People came to the Seder hungry and thirsty, so they drank much more. But even 4 cups of wine can knock a person out. And that's why, practically, it's probably better to use grape juice. But there is a very strong halakhic opinion that says that any drink that cannot intoxicate is not considered a way of demonstrating freedom. When we're drinking the 4 cups, we're supposed to be demonstrating freedom. So therefore, Rabbi Feinstein is of the opinion that if one drank grape juice, he has not fulfilled that obligation of demonstrating freedom, and therefore he says you have to drink something that can intoxicate. So what one can do is to dilute his wine with grape juice. That's what you guys saw me doing, those of you who were there last year. Because if you dilute it with water, you run into a problem that the wine is already diluted with water, and there are different opinions as to how much the wine may be diluted. There's a difference between Sephardim and Ashkenazim. Ashkenazim say up to 50%. Well, in New York, when this Haggadah was written, the average wine was already diluted at least 30%. So you can't add that much water without hitting 50%, and then it's no longer wine. Then you have a problem. You haven't fulfilled your obligation according to any opinion. So that's why what I do is I mix wine with grape juice. And even a small amount of wine and grape juice, if you drink enough of it, it's going to intoxicate. So I usually do like a quarter of a cup wine and 3/4 of a cup grape juice. So that's number one. Those who want to go with grape juice, they have opinions to rely on. Here in Israel, I think most people drink grape juice. You ask your Blissman, I think at his table there's only grape juice. There is this strong halachic opinion that says that it has to be a drink that can intoxicate, and a good way to fulfill all opinions is to mix wine with grape juice. Now, the cup that we drink from should be cleaned at the beginning of the Seder. It has to be clean, and it should be filled to the top. Now, how much do we have to drink? So whenever we drink a cup in honor of a mitzvah like Kiddush or Havdalah, we have to drink a revius halug. We have to have a cup that can hold a revius halug. Revius means a quarter, like reva, quarter. Arba is four, reva is a quarter. Revius halug, a quarter of a lug. Now, how much is that? So the Gemara gives us two ways of measuring, and the one is by area, and the other one, the Gemara tells us, you take a container that's this and this length, by this and this width, by this and this height, and that's how you figure out the volume, this volume. And then the Gemara tells us how we could figure it out with using eggs, using displacement. How many eggs is this going to be? And the problem is that when the Gemara gives these two measurements, they're supposed to match, and when we match them up, the measurement that goes using a width of hands, amma and tefach, is twice as big as the measurement of our eggs. So there, from here stems the famous machlokas, which people attribute to the Chazon Ish and Rav Chaim Noe, but really stems back to the Tzvach, the Noda Yehuda, and was really addressed even by the Beis Yosef in his day. The famous machlokas is to how we measure all measurements in the Torah. When we know that eating, in order, anytime Torah tells us we have to eat something, it means we have to eat a kezayis. We're going to have to eat matzah, Pesach by night. How much matzah do you have to eat? So we always say you have to eat a kezayis. Anytime the Torah gives us an obligation to eat, we say we must eat a kezayis. Anytime Torah tells us we have to drink, we say we have to drink a revius. Well, if our olives, if according to the measurement using the linear measurements to form this vessel, comes out to be twice as large as using the volume measurements of an egg and an olive, so then some say that our olives and our eggs became half the size of the ancient olive and the ancient egg. Meaning when you measure, you take a vessel and you measure it with thumb width, the way the Gemara says, with hand width, and you make a vessel this size, so it comes out to be twice, you need twice as many eggs as the Gemara says should fit into such a vessel. So therefore one opinion says that all the eggs became smaller, they became half the size. So then when the Gemara says you have to eat the volume of an olive, a kezayis, so it's twice the volume, almost twice the volume of an olive, a modern day olive. And when we say you have to eat an egg, the volume of an egg, so we say it's almost, the eggs have become half the size they were anciently. And we end up with them two measurements for each measurement. Each measurement of volume, there's the measurement if you take the modern day eggs, and the measurement if we reevaluate what the size of the ancient eggs was. You guys with me? Okay. So when we're going to drink the wine, we need to have a cup that holds ervius, a quarter of a lug. And this amounts to, according to our eggs nowadays, this would amount to 3.3 ounces, which isn't that much. If you use the ancient eggs, so it comes out to 4.42 ounces. But being that the four cups are rabbinic, they're a rabbinic institution, we go with the more lenient opinion. So one has to have a cup that holds at least this amount, 3.3 ounces. And one should drink when one is going to drink the cup of wine at Kiddush or any other of the four cups, one should drink the majority of the revius. Meaning, let's say you have a huge cup. You have a cup that holds 6 ounces. And many cups today hold that. You have a nice sized goblet, holds 6 ounces. The basic halacha is all you have to drink is 1.65 ounces, which on this cup would be about this much. It's not that much. People think it's a lot. Tomorrow night, God willing, we'll measure it out. You'll see how much it is. It's not that much, 1.65 ounces. Figure this cup is how much? 5-6 ounce cup? What? What do you mean 80?
Eight.
An 8 ounce cup? 1.65 is still about here. It's not that much. The problem is that most people come to the Seder hungry and thirsty, and they down the first cup of wine, and then their stomachs are empty the rest of the Seder for the next 2-3 hours while we talk and discuss the Yetzias Mitzrayim. So there's nothing coming into the stomach, and then the wine takes its toll. I recommend that people, when they make the Bar Priya Zapin, should have in mind that I'm going to drink water during the meal, during the next 2-3 hours. And this was Rav Shlomo Zalman's recommendation as well. You come to the Seder, you're thirsty, so drink the minimum amount of wine, and then continue drinking water. We know that the blessing of Bari Priya Gafen suffices for other drinks as well. And one may drink water after one has drunk the wine. So I would think it's better that people should drink the water than drink the wine and end up conking out during the Seder. There is an opinion that says that one should drink the majority of the wine in the cup. So last year, guys knew this, and guys were wise guys. I made sure to have a small cup, the exact size, 3.3 ounces, and I drank the majority of the cup. It's also this way it's easy to measure if you've drank enough or not. And other guys, they had these big cups, and guys said, "Rabbi, don't you want me to be stringent?" I warned them. I said, "Guys, don't drink so much wine. It's going to hit your head very fast." And guys said, "We want to be stringent. You taught us we should drink the majority of the cup, and there's even an opinion that says you should drink the whole cup." So they downed the cup, and they paid the price very quickly. I don't recommend it, but what I can tell you is that if you come to my house, most of the cups I have are oversized. That's what we got as wedding gifts. So you're welcome to bring your own cup. You should bring nice cups in honor of Pesach, that you kashered for Pesach, that you boiled them in preparation of Pesach. But if you're going to get cups from me, so I only have two or three cups that are the exact size, and I take them for myself and my wife. You guys take care of yourselves. If I'm giving you cups, I'll give you what cups I have. Yeah.
You mentioned drinking water after Hadassah. Can you do that all through to Rasta, or like other places where there's an issue with
Safek? We'll get to that. For much of the Haggadah, you could do that. If someone is going to have problems drinking the wine, so if he's not going to be able to complete the Seder, or he's going to become bedridden because of this wine, so he should drink grape juice. But if he has some other issue, so sometimes because of people's medications, they're not supposed to drink a lot of wine or grape juice or some other problem, so he should consult his local Orthodox rabbi. Maybe the rabbi will tell him he shouldn't drink at all. Each person should consult his rabbi, but there is a leniency that it's worthwhile to know. There is a lenient opinion that says that once you drank a cheekful, you fulfilled your duty of drinking wine for that cup. And the cheekful is about 3/4 of an ounce. If one could drink a whole ounce, that's preferable. But that's a leniency, and children should only drink their cheekful worth, which is about 1/2 ounce. We don't push kids to drink a lot of wine. When the Torah tells us, or our sages tell us, we have a mitzvah to eat or drink, so what constitutes eating and what constitutes drinking? We say that whenever the Torah commands us to eat something, it means we have to eat a certain volume in a certain amount of time. The Torah tells me I have to eat matzah. So I know that means I have to eat a kezayis of matzah within a certain amount of time. That amount of time is called kedei achilas prat. The amount of time it takes me to eat half a loaf of 6 or 8 eggs. So how long does it take me to eat half such a loaf? So here there are differing opinions. Some say 2 minutes, 3, 4, up to 9 minutes. Between 2 and 9 minutes, there are different opinions. But that's when it comes to eating. That's what we'll discuss when it comes to eating the matzah. So we have to eat the kezayis, the olive, the volume of an olive worth of matzah. We have to eat that within this amount of time. When it comes to drinking, so then we go with the more stringent opinion that says that we have to finish drinking the minimum amount of wine, whichever opinion you're going to go with, 1.65 ounces, we'll say, the majority of the revius, the majority of the revius halug. So the more stringent opinion says we have to do it within the amount of time it would take to drink a whole revius. How much time does it take to drink a whole revius? About, let's say a revius is 3.3 ounces. How long does it take to drink that? We say you drink in 2 sips. Each time takes away from your mouth. Let's say it takes 8 seconds, 10 seconds. But you can't dilly-dilly. You have to drink the 1.65 ounces. You do have to drink in a relatively short amount of time. We have to lean on our left side, including lefties, and ideally we should lean on a pillow, but if not, we could lean on any item, even on someone else's knees. Women don't have to recline. Children have to recline in front of their parents, but students are not allowed to recline in front of their Torah teacher, in front of their Rebbe, unless the Rebbe gave them permission. Yeah?
How can we put the left side?
There are two understandings as to why it's the left side. One understanding is that we lean on the left side so our right hand would be free. And if that were the primary understanding halakhically, then lefties should lean on their right side. But there is another understanding quoted, which we take more seriously because it affects human life, and that is that our sages said that when one leans on one's right side, then that can adversely affect the way his swallowing takes place. And it's more likely that one will choke if one leans on their right side. And therefore, that according to that understanding, there's no difference between lefties and righties. Right. And being that that understanding is saying that we lean on our left side in order to preclude a dangerous situation, so we take that understanding more seriously and we say even lefties should lean on their left side.
Okay.
So we lean, when do we lean, when do we recline? During the drinking of the four cups, eating the matzah, and eating the afikoman. One should recline while eating the karpas, the vegetable that we're dipping, while eating the korech, the sandwich, and during the meal, which no one does because it's uncomfortable for us, so we don't take that on. These are preferences that most people don't do. On the korech, some people do lean, and that's really the right way to do it when we eat the sandwich. So we start with kaddish. We make kiddish, we're sanctifying the day. And we're rushing home to start early so the kids don't fall asleep. It is customary to have someone else pour the wine. One of the things we do, like aristocracy. And we make the blessing of Shechionu as we discussed. Then we wash our hands. As we discussed last night, on Sunday night, we're washing our hands in preparation of dipping the vegetables. And we do not make a blessing on the washing of the hands. And then we eat the vegetable. We dip a vegetable, preferably a raw green vegetable. It isn't correct what people do, that they cook potatoes. In Russia, everyone cooks potatoes. I don't know if they had any other vegetable available. But ideally, the Gemara doesn't even call it karpas. The Gemara says the dipping of the green vegetable. So one should ideally take a green vegetable, and we dip it in salt water. We make the blessing Borei Pri Adama. And we have in mind that this blessing will also go for the mara, the bitter herbs which we will eat during the meal. And we eat less than a kazayis, less than the volume of an olive. Now, what's the idea of starting the Seder where we just made Kiddush and we don't start eating the bread, the matzah, we don't do anything, we just dip this vegetable, make a Borei Pri Adama, and eat a little bit. What's the big idea? The big idea is to ask, what's the big idea? It's exactly the idea, to get the kids to ask. We should preferably eat less than a kezayis of the karpas, because there are different opinions as to whether one should make an after blessing on this vegetable. So if we're going to eat more than a kezayis, we enter a situation of suffix, of doubt as to whether we should make the after blessing. If one ate more than a kezayis, which almost everyone does, then he doesn't make the after blessing. And if you want to feel pious about it, so you could eat more than a kezayis, and if someone starts telling you something, you tell them the Gra says you have to eat more than a kezayis, and that's what the Rambam seems to hold. So that isn't the custom. The custom is, and all children know, is that you eat less than a kezayis of the karpas, because then you enter, if you eat more than a kezayis, you might be obligated to make an after blessing. But I can tell you from years of experience, when people show up to the Seder, they're famished, and people end up, most people end up eating more than a kezayis, at least the people I've seen, which is improper. You have who to rely on, according to the Gra. That's okay, and you still don't make an after blessing. Even if you ate a lot of karpas, you still do not make an after blessing. What's the idea of the karpas? Aside from getting the kids to ask, it's an appetizer. It's one of the things wealthy people do. They have a smorgasbord before they have their meal. They eat hors d'oeuvres. You show up to the meal and you have a small snack. So that's why it's supposed to be a green vegetable. A green vegetable that's uncooked isn't very satiating. It's a good intro to the meal. You eat a little bit of pepper, it doesn't fill your stomach. You sit down and eat a little bit of potatoes are filling. So that's not the idea of the karpas. After we finish the karpas, after we've dipped the vegetables and we've eaten a little bit, we break the middle matzah and wrap it, the larger piece of it, as afikomen, in a cloth and hide it. This is the main matzah for tonight, this wrapped piece of matzah. And this is to commemorate what the Torah tells us, that when the Jews left Egypt, they put the matzah wrapped over their shoulders. And now we are ready to begin the story of the Haggadah, and we'll begin with the song. Let's remind ourselves the song, firstly, of Kadesh Urchat, the order of the night. So,
Kadesh Urchat, Katat Yachat, Mahagid Rachtam, Otsi Matah, Maror Korech, Shulchan Orech, Safon Barech, Hallel Mitzah.
Give me 1 second, we have it now. Everyone can see it.
La 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 Mahagid Rachta Motsi Mahata Maror Korech Shulchan Orech Tafun Barech Hallel Mirza.
One more time.
Kadesh Urchat Kartas Yachat Mahagid Rachta Motsi Mahata Maror Korech Shulchan Orech Tzafon Barech Hallel Mirta.
So we're beginning the Magid. Now we're beginning the telling over of the exodus of Egypt, from Egypt. Those of you who have Haggadah, please join me. We said that we begin with Halach Ma'anya. We hold up the broken piece of matzah. Now that we've broken it, we show the kid, this is the poor man's bread that our forefathers ate back in the land of Egypt. Whoever is hungry, come eat. This welcome is really being stated to the guests sitting around the table. You should know you're all going to join me in the meal. It's interesting that last year we really saw this. Right after the Halach Ma'anya, so the custom is that we make believe the meal is over. The ancient custom was that they'd remove the table, and then the custom became that they'd just remove the matzahs, and today we're even more lazy, we just cover the matzahs. So I tried to fulfill this minhag, and last year, I just after saying the Halach Ma'anya, I said to my wife, thank you, everything was delicious, it was great, and we had some guys at the table who got very nervous. Rabbi, I didn't have enough. I'm hungry. You gotta be kidding. I haven't eaten all day. They told me you have good food here. So really we're introducing, we're starting with Halach Ma'anya, we're telling everyone around, hey, whoever is hungry, don't worry, you're all welcome, come eat, we're gonna have a good meal coming up. And whoever needs to should join us in our Pesach. This year we're here, next year we hope to be in Israel. This year we're servants, next year we should be real free men in the land of Israel. Yeah.
What was the reason that they used to remove the table?
After the Halach Ma'anya, the ancient custom was that we'd remove the table, and this is to make believe the meal is over. We want the children to be asking questions. Hey, what's going on here? I haven't eaten anything yet. First you make kiddush and you don't make amotzi. After the amotzi, you dip a little bit of vegetable and you give me a small piece. We never dipped before. Now you're suddenly making believe the meal's over. I'm hungry. What's going on? And then we pour another cup of wine. So now the kid is really puzzled. Wait a second, what are you pouring another cup of wine for?
So what would you have said when you were moving the table?
Oh, so then the kid says, ooh, what's going on here? I say, it's a good question, I'll tell you in a second. Just 1 second, I'll get it. And then we've done so many weird things that the kid is going to ask us a question. What happened that this night is so different from all the other nights? Shebechol alilot, all the other nights, I'm offering chametz u'matzah. I know we eat chametz, I know we eat matzah. We eat whatever we want. Halayla ze kolo matzah. Tonight we only eat matzah. Shebchol alot anochrin shal yorkot. Every night we eat any vegetables we want. Halayla ze maror. Tonight I see the main course. I see what mommy set out. It's those bitter herbs. It's lettuce. I don't like lettuce. Shebchol alot nanu matvilin filu pamachat. Every night we never dip. Halayla ze shtepamim. Tonight I know we're going to dip twice. I see the salt water we dipped already, and I see the charos is waiting for a dip. What's going on with these dips? Shevchol alot anochlim menshim menesubim. Every night we sit, we eat, sitting, leaning. Halayla ze kulanu subim. Tonight suddenly everyone has pillows, everyone's leaning. What's going on? So the kid asked us these four questions, and it's customary that everyone asks the questions. Even though if the child asks his parent or the wife asks her husband, he doesn't have to review the questions, he could run straight into the answer. The custom is that everyone says the questions, and everyone is obligated, other than the one leading the Seder, to say these questions. The one leading the Seder doesn't have to say these questions if someone asks them to him, if his child asks them or his wife asks them. But the custom is that everyone else has to, and the custom is that even the one leading the Seder does review these questions. Yeah?
I always forget every answer to this question. In general, with
Magi,
is there an obligation for everybody to say along what's going on?
Yeah, everyone's supposed to say what's going on. From Rabban Gamliel, Omer, from the time that we read the verse, Rabban Gamliel says, what's the minimum that one must say on the night of Pesach? Even women have to be careful to be there to say that. Yeah?
To say or follow along?
To say. Everyone should say.
I've been told I just have to say this and go to the little kid.
Yeah, but usually what I've seen is that people review it. Everyone sings it after the little kid does it.
Yeah.
Everyone sings it together. And everyone should.
But again, like, I mean, then in other parts of Magid also, not the whatever, like, you know, usually there's one person at the table meeting and everybody's listening.
Yeah, I know, but preferably everyone's supposed to sing, yeah. I've also seen that. I think usually the reason that happens is because people stop and talk, say Divrei Torah, and then they run through sections of the Haggadah, which isn't the way it's supposed to be. The Chazanish wouldn't allow Divrei Torah to be said at the table. He'd say, look, the Haggadah's elaborating on the story. There's no point in elaborating beyond the Haggadah. Let's see what the person who compiled the Haggadah had to say. He wouldn't let anyone say any Divrei Torah, the Chazanish, at his Seder. We say later on that one should extrapolate. As much as one can add, one should add. On the story of Yitzias Mitzrayim. So the Chazanish said, that's what this Haggadah is. The Haggadah is the extrapolation, so that's what we have to read. I don't know. Avadim ha'inu leparov Mitzrayim. So we're telling the kid, what's the answer? You want to know what's going on here? I'll tell you. Way back when, we all used to be servants, things didn't always look as nice. And this all goes back to hatred that went on between the Jewish people. The story of the exile to Egypt really begins with the prophecy that God showed Avram. God told Avram, Yadoa teda, you should certainly know, Kigel yezalcha be'eretz lo'lahim, your children will be strangers in a land that's foreign to them. Va'avadum minutam, they will make them work, they will torture them, 400 shana, 400 years. V'gam et agoy asho yavodu dan anochi, and the nation that they will be in servitude to, I will ultimately judge. And after all this, they will leave with great wealth. So 430 years prior to our exit from Egypt, Avram sees this vision. God makes a treaty with Avram, tells him this is what's going to happen. And the first 190 years, the first 220 years pass without our being in Egypt. We were only in Egypt for 210 years. So our sages tell us that when God said you'll be a nation in a land that is foreign to you, this could have happened in the land of Israel. God didn't identify which land that would be. And the second Yitzchak was born in the land of Canaan, and Avram didn't own the land, he was a stranger in the land, so God did kindness to Avram, and God said, I'm going to have the clock start ticking from now. Now that you have a son, I promised you that your children will be strangers in the land. Well, he's a stranger in this land. So from the minute Yitzchak was born, the 400 years started ticking. So why couldn't all 400 years have ticked away this way? So our sages tell us the reason was because of the hatred that existed between Yosef and his siblings. Because Yaakov treated Yosef, his son, differently, he gave him a special vest, he treated him differently than the other brothers, the brothers were jealous of him. And they sold him as a slave down to Egypt, and a heavenly voice came out and said, you're selling him as a slave, your children are going to be slaves in Egypt. So the whole story of our servitude, our torture in Egypt began with the hatred between the brothers. And Avadim Ayinu, when we say we were servants to Pharaoh and Mitzrayim, this doesn't only include the Jewish people. This is also an allusion to Yosef, where it all began. We were all slaves, because Yosef was a slave to Pharaoh and Mitzrayim. Yeah.
What does that emulate Hashem as much as possible? Hashem also selected Israel as his sovereign nation. So, are they anywhere doing like,
so
the nations are jealous of Israel and expected the father picks up one son more than normal.
I think that that's a fair question, which deserves a long answer. I would just want to maybe open the answer with a few possible trains of thought. The question was asked, isn't there favoritism towards the Jewish people? If a father has a son that walks into his house and burns it down, and he has another son that comes and builds it up, do they both deserve equal treatment? Is that favoritism when he treats the one who built his home differently than the one who destroyed it? If a father tells his children, I want you to do A, B, C, and D, and some of the children say, we're not interested, and some of the children say, we are interested, whatever you want, we want to do, is that favoritism that he treats them differently? And if some of the children have certain potentials that they don't realize, and other children go to those children and take that potential and galvanize it, they take that potential, make it grow, and use the tools that the other children had and could have served God with but chose not to, and now they do use those tools, is that favoritism to treat them differently? Yeah. And if you'll think about it, there were three answers I gave you here.
Yeah,
they might have sounded similar, but they weren't.
So what was the plan of the
That's a different question, which also deserves an answer.
Yeah,
but okay, so we're going off too much on tangent. It's a fair question, but even your first question deserves a longer answer.
Mm-hmm.
So, in Yitzhak Hashem, we'll have Thursday night. Remind me, we'll try to deal with it. So we're saying, Avadim Ainu Lefor of Mitzrayim, we were servants to Pharaoh in Egypt. A difficult king, a difficult nation, no slave ever made it out alive from Egypt, from under Pharaoh. Vayotzeinu Hashem Elokeinu Misham Biyad Chazakah. Hashem, our God. Notice the stress, because this is where it all began. The fact that Hashem became our God began in Egypt. The fact that God had a chosen people began with Yetzias Mitzrayim, with God taking us out of Egypt. God took us out of there with a strong hand of Yisro Nitzuyan, an outstretched arm. And if God would have not taken out our forefathers from Egypt, we'd still be in servitude to Pharaoh in Egypt. And this is an explanation. You'll say, well, God did us a favor way back when. He's been doing us hundreds of favors since then. What do we have to sit tonight and thank God? So we're saying no, because that favor, if not for that, we would still be there. We know that the Medrash tells us the Jewish people had gone down to the 49 depths of Tuma, and had we stayed there another second, it would have been all over. So there wouldn't have been a people to redeem from Egypt, and God took us out, so to speak, in the nick of time. So if God would not have taken us out, we would still be in service to Pharaoh, because things were good in Egypt. We were working hard, but we still had it good physically. We know the Jewish people, when they were in Egypt, they said, we remember those pots filled with fish, we remember the meat, remember all the good stuff we used to eat back in Egypt. So even though the Jews were working very hard and they were in servitude, but Egypt was a land of plenty. Egypt was a land where everyone had enough food. That's why they could have so many children and there was no lacking of food. Egypt is described as the land which is similar to Gan Eden. Kigan Hashem Keretz Mitzrayim, the Pasuk says. Like the garden of God, the land of Egypt. The land of Egypt is called the garden of God. So, had we stayed in Egypt, we would still be in servitude. Servitude doesn't have to mean physically. Servitude could mean spiritually as well. We would have lost it. There wouldn't have been a Jewish people to take out of Egypt. Even if we were all wise with understanding, elders, all of us knowing the Torah, notice we're describing four levels of wisdom. On the night of Pesach, we're going to be using the number four a lot, because God used the number four. God used four terms to describe how God would take us out of Egypt. The four levels of redemption, as we discussed in Parshas Vayera, that God took us out from under the servitude, and slowly but surely God took us out of Egypt. There were four stages to the redemption. So now we're saying, if we were all wise, understanding, elders, knowledgeable in the Torah, we'd still have a mitzvah, we'd have a mitzvah to tell over the exit from Egypt. Whoever tells more, the more you say about leaving from Egypt, the more it is praiseworthy. And so the Chazanish says that this is the Ribui. Now God itself is the Ribui. That's what he says. This really deserves focus. We only had time. What does it mean, Marbe? What's our mitzvah tonight? What are we praising? If the mitzvah is to say as much as possible, so that's the mitzvah. What do you need to praise it? And if the mitzvah is just the bare minimum, so what's the point in adding? Go learn something else. Well, what is this level that we're saying you could do a minimum, and if you do more, it's praiseworthy? How does that work? That's not for now. We have to recognize that there are two points in the story of the Yetzias Mitzrayim on this night. One is that this is the night that God took us out of Mitzrayim. And we know that every year we make a commemoration on the 14th, 15th of Adar, when God saved us from Haman and Ahasuerus. So when we hit a time where God did a miracle for us, at that time we commemorate. And this is praise to Hashem, that we're praising Hashem. Tonight Hashem did the miracles for us. And the more basic is that because God took us out tonight, so we're telling the story tonight. Meaning one is it's a praise for us. And the other is a praise for Hashem. God gave us a mitzvah tonight. We have a mitzvah tonight, on the night of Pesach, to tell over the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. That's one point. The Torah says, on this night you tell your child. That has nothing to do with the fact that it happened on this night. There's a second point. Because it happened on this night, that we were stressing tonight, God did it for us. If it were just for the mitzvah, so, okay, I'll tell over my son. I'll tell him, God took me out of Egypt, and things, everything I owe God. But there's more to it than that. There's an element of praise, that because it happened tonight, it's like an anniversary. And on an anniversary of an event, so we speak more of the event. So there are two points here. One is the mitzvah that God gave us on this night to tell the story. So I have a mitzvah tonight to tell my son the story. And the second point is that this night happens to be an anniversary of the event that actually happened. And so therefore on tonight I'm saying, hey, tonight is the night that God took me out of Mitzrayim, and therefore tonight I'm praising him. Tonight I have a mitzvah, and tonight is the anniversary. Two points. And that's what Agada continues. Maaseh, the following story, the Rabbi Eliezer, we have Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, started learning at a very late age. Rabbi Yeshua, that's Rabbi Yeshua ben Hanania, the blacksmith, who was his Rebbe and later on his contemporary. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who was the youngster in the crowd. He was one of the students who became a great rabbi. Rabbi Akiva, who came from Gerim. Rabbi Tarfon. Shehoyu Mesubim ben Nevrat. All of them were sitting, leaning and feasting in Bnei Brak. They were telling the stories of Yetzias Mitzrayim all night long. All night they were telling the stories, the different traditions that we have as to how Yetzias Mitzrayim happened. They were telling the story about how we came to the sea, about how the angel of Egypt chased us to the sea, the Jews turned around and saw the angel. There are many stories we could tell about the exit from Egypt. So they were expanding all night long, they were discussing it, and they weren't done. At Gebalt HaMidein Amrulim, their student came and told them, Rabbotein, is Yasman Kachman Shashachi? Rabbi, it's time, we have a mitzvah now that's going to pass. We have to perform that mitzvah, now we have to say Shema. So we see that even though they didn't have to say new things, they all knew the Torah. Rabbi Gleza, Rabbi Yeshua, he's talking about sages who knew all the secrets and the depths of the Torah. Nonetheless, they could speak all night long about it. Why? So this is the dual point here. One is, they had a mitzvah. So they have a mitzvah to tell the story. But that mitzvah might be over at midnight. But there's a second point. It's not only the point of the mitzvah. It's an anniversary tonight. Tonight is the night. God did it for us tonight. It all began tonight. If not for tonight, there would be no Jewish people. This is where it all started. So if you think about it, you get excited. You get involved. And then you can keep going all night long, even beyond when you have to say it. Maybe the obligation to say is only until midnight. There are different opinions. So when does one have to expand on the story of leaving Egypt? But if you realize that tonight is the anniversary, you say, wait a second, this is when it all happened. So then you can keep going till the morning. Yeah?
All the cases you mentioned, Rabbi Akiva, all of them, when they had the people of Syria and the Nebat, they thought the Messiah was coming, and the Bar Kokhba. But isn't the 8-day Pesach when the Messiah is coming?
Good question. I don't know. Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah tells us, "Arani keven shivim shana." I was like an old man. Really, he was 18 years old. But when he became the Nasi, so he went to consult with his wife. Should I accept the position? And his wife said, "You're a young man. It's not respectable. An 18-year-old will have the position of prince over all the Jewish people. You'll be the chief rabbi. What's going on here?" So that night, God made a miracle, and he had strands of white hair enter his beard. So he woke up the next morning looking like an old man. So the Rav Ben Azariah said, it's as though I were 70 years old, and I never succeeded in convincing the rabbis to my way of thinking that at night when we read Shema as part of the evening prayer, we should read the three portions of Shema like we do in the morning. The rabbi said at night there wasn't really a full redemption. The major part of the redemption of the Jews from Egypt was by day. What happened at night? The Jews were sitting at home eating their Korban Pesach. God went and killed the firstborns at midnight, and in the morning the Egyptians were rushing them. They left Egypt. So the night isn't really a major part of the redemption from Egypt. And Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said, no, the night is a major part of the redemption from Egypt, and this is part of the anniversary that we're commemorating on the night of Pesach. So he was arguing with the sages, and the sages said, no, every night the sages would go to Davin Ma'ariv, and they wouldn't say the parasha of Vayomer Hashem Moshe Amo, the parasha of Tzitzit, they wouldn't say at night. Because they held there was no point. The major redemption was by day. Ad Shedrasha Ben Zoman, until Ben Zoma was a very famous person for his depth. Ben Zoma was always able to find sources from within the psukim, and he was able to derive from the verse, Shenemah, the verse states, Leman Tishkot Yom Tzitzchah Me'at Mitzrayim, you're supposed to remember the day that you left Egypt, Kol Yemei Chayecha, all the days of your life. Yemei Chayecha Yamin, Yemei Chayecha refers to the days, so we know every morning we commemorate leaving Egypt by saying the Parsha of Shema. Kol Yemei Chayecha, the added word of Kol, all the days of your life, Halelot, comes to include the night. And when he said that, then the rabbis gave in, that the nights also need to be commemorated. The Chachamim Omrim, the sages, had initially been of the opinion that Yemei Chayecha Olam Hazeh, Yemei Chayecha refers to this world, Kol Yemei Chayecha Lavid Imot HaMashiach, that extra word of Kol, all the days of your life, comes to teach us that even in the days of the Messiah, when God will save us from all 70 nations, we have tradition that when the Mashiach will come, he's going to save us from 70 nations, and one would think, what's the big deal? God saved us from one nation, from the Egyptians. In the days of the Messiah, when we've been saved from 70 nations, who has to remember the exit from Egypt? So that's what the verse is telling us. All the days of your life, even the days of the Messiah, you will commemorate the exit from Egypt. And the sages ultimately bought into Rav Elazar ben Azariah's way of thinking, and they said really the redemption at night was a worthwhile redemption, and we learned the verse the way Ben Zoma said, and at night we also commemorate the exit from Egypt. So their argument really was focused on every day, on the remembrance of the Exodus every morning and every night, what we say Shema every morning and every night. But it has relevance as to our understanding of when the majority, when the major parts of the Exodus began. And his way of thinking, which became halacha, was that the major parts really began at night. And when we're doing the Seder at night, we're not only performing the mitzvah that the Torah tells us to tell over the story of the exit from Egypt, we're also performing an anniversary, because at night really the redemption begins. And now we're going to go in depth to the story of the exit from Egypt. And before we go deeply into the Maggid, so our sages instituted something similar to a blessing without saying God's name. Baruch HaMakom, blessed is the place, that's God who is omnipresent. Baruch Hu, blessed is He, meaning God. Baruch Shantan Torah L'Amo Yisrael, blessed is God who gave the Torah to the Jewish people. Baruch Hu, blessed is He. Notice we use four terms of Baruch, again the number four, and this is a modification of a blessing on the Torah. See, we're almost saying God's name. We're saying Baruch HaMakom instead of saying God's name. And instead of saying Baruch Ashabach Abam Natan Lanu Torato, we're saying Shenatan Torah L'Amo Yisrael. It's an offshoot of the blessing on the Torah, which is an introduction to this segment of Torah, of Maggid, that we're about to begin. And there is a song for this, which we'll do right now. I'm just going to type up the word. So I'm with you. Our sages didn't want to put in a full-fledged blessing. On the other hand, they wanted something similar to a blessing. This is the tune, here are the words.
Baruch HaMakom, Baruch Hu, Baruch Shenatan Torah, Shenatan Torah Le'amo Yisrael, Baruch Hu, Baruch HaMakom, Baruch Shenatan Torah, Shenatan Torah L'Amo Yisrael, Baruch Hu.
Now just the tune.
Ta da la 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 Baruch Shenatan Torah, Shenatan Torah L'Amo Yisrael, Baruch Hu.
One more time.
Baruch HaMakom, Baruch Hu, Baruch Shenatan Torah, Shenatan Torah L'Amo Yisrael, Baruch Hu.
Keneged Arba Avanim Dibra Torah, the Torah spoke with regard to four sons. You know that there are four places that the Torah describes that our children will ask us, and we will answer them. We will tell our children about the fact that we were slaves in Egypt and God took us out of Egypt. And our sages derived from that the Torah is really discussing four different children a person might have. Echad Chacham, one is a wise son, he's learned Torah, he understands what's going on, he has questions. Echad Rasha, and one is wicked. He's not interested in learning, he's interested in getting on your nerves and mocking what you have. Echad Tam, and one is simple. Echad Shenoy Dali Sholem, one doesn't even know how to ask questions. He really doesn't know anything. And the Torah is speaking to all of them. Chacham ha'umer, what does the wise son say? So he already knows that there are different types of mitzvot, so he already breaks it down and he asks, ma ha'idot, la'chukim, ha'mishpatim, what are the different testimonies, decrees, ordinances that asher tziva Hashem lokeinu etchem, that Hashem our God commanded you. Notice he's saying commanded you, but he says Hashem our God, and that makes all the difference in the world. When we go out to bless on the Torah, we say Baruchu, you bless. It's Hashem Avrach, Hashem who is blessed. The second we say, we acknowledge that God is blessed. So even though we're saying you bless, we're not taking ourselves out of the crowd. We're acknowledging that God is blessed. The wise son automatically shows us that he's one of ours, but he's asking, what are these commandments? So teach him the laws of Pesach, explain to him what's going on, and teach him one of the laws is that after eating the Korban Pesach, we don't go for dessert. Afikoman really means take out the vessels to the neighbor, we're going to go over there and have tea, we're going to have dessert. So afiko, take out mana, the vessels, we don't do that on Pesach. On Pesach we stick around and we learn and we discuss the story of leaving Egypt all night long. We don't go eat dessert by other people. Rashama omel, what does the wicked one say? What is this work that you guys are doing? He said two things. He stressed the fact that this is work, this isn't pleasurable, who's interested in this? And the other thing he said is that I'm not interested, I'm not one of you guys. What is this work that you guys are doing? Lachem milolo, he's come to stress you and not him. Being that he removed himself from the community of believers, kafal bi'ikar, he denies the basic principles of Judaism. So we are told to blunt his teeth. Tell him, because of this, you see, I have the maror, I have the mitzvah of matzah, I have the mitzvah of the Korban Pesach. See, because of this, because I do the mitzvahs God told me, God took me out of Egypt. He began the conversation by saying, I'm not one of you. So we answer him, God took me out. Leave elolo, me and not him. I'm alluding to him, you're right from removing yourself from the crowd. Because the way you're behaving, if you would have been there, you wouldn't have been redeemed. God didn't take out those who didn't want to go out. You don't want to be part of the group, so you should know. In Egypt, there were other people who didn't want to be part of the group, and they were. They were buried in Egypt. They didn't make it out. What does the simple son say? Mazot, what's going on? He doesn't know how to go into details. So you tell him a simple story. God took us out of Egypt, the house of slaves, with a strong hand. You answer him simply. And the son that doesn't know how to ask, you have to initiate the subject. And that's what we're doing in the beginning of our Gadol. All the weird things that we're doing is at tachlo. We're trying to initiate the conversation with the son. Our sages instituted all the unusual things that we discussed as a way of doing at tachlo, starting the conversation with him. And Mar, as the verse states, v'igata levincha, you start the conversation, you tell your son, bayom olemo, v'avuzeh asasha mitzitim mitzan, because of this, and again you're showing him, you're illustrating the mitzvahs of the night, this is why God did and took me out of Egypt. I might think if my kid doesn't know anything, he's not even initiating the conversation, I should start telling him about the exit from Egypt on Rosh Chodesh. Start 15 days early. Talmud lomar bayomahu. That's why the Torah tells us on this day we have a mitzvah to tell it over. I might think maybe start by day. You have a lot to tell him. Talmud lomar ba'avu zeh. That's why the Torah says you point it and you say because of this. Ba'avu zeh lo amarti l'b'shah sheyesh masal ma'or munchin lefanecha. When we say this, we're stressing the mitzvahs that are placed before us, that we're doing hands-on education, we're telling the kids because of this. You see this? See this mar? You see it's bitter? You see you cry when you eat this horseradish? That's how I was crying when I was working hard in Egypt. And this is the Sfaradi custom that we reenact as though it happened to me. A person, we said, Chayav Adam, Bechol Dov Ado, we're going to see, the Agada tells us in every generation, a person has to see himself as though he himself went out of Egypt. So one version says a person has to see, he has to visualize himself. A person has to feel like, I myself was there. And the other version says, a person has to show himself. And that's to reenact as though he himself was in Egypt. And that's what the spies do. They do a reenactment as though they themselves were in Egypt. Initially, our forefathers were idol worshippers. And this is another opinion as to how we begin with our shameful history. We said that one of the themes that are going to run through the night is Matchil Begnut Umsiyem B'Shevach. We begin with the shame of our past and we end with the praise of our present. So one opinion says that we began with Avadim Ha'inu. Our shameful past is that we mentioned we were once slaves. Another opinion says that this is where we're beginning our shameful past. They were saying our history is that we used to be idol worshippers. Who were the idol worshippers? So the continuation of this verse stresses our forefathers, that Abraham's father, Terach, and his father, Nachor, were all idol worshippers. But the truth is that this also refers to the Jewish people in Egypt. Initially, the Jews in Egypt were idol worshippers. When Moshe came onto the scene, the Jews were all serving idols. So Mitzchilav Dev Dazra Yoav Atenu is not taking 15 steps back, going back generations till Avram and Terah. It's also referring to the Jews in Egypt. The Jews in Egypt were also idol worshippers. We discuss how God is blessed that He keeps His promise to the Jewish people and the treaty He made with Avram, and then we lift the cup as we sing V'hi she'amdala avoteinu velanu, and with this we will conclude tonight. And this is what stood by our fathers and us, that we had to put up with many who have come to annihilate us, and in every generation that they've come to annihilate us, Hashem rescues us from their hands. That's what saves us, the fact that Hashem is by our side, nothing else. And as we sing this is so important, we hold the cup up. And being that we're going to honor the cup to sing the song over the cup of wine, so to, so to speak, hide the shame of the matzah, so we cover the matzahs as we sing this.
Can I
move the
question?
Sure, I'm with you.
According to the Lubavitcher Rebbe, what about the Tzitzis? The one who doesn't come.
Let's ask him. I'm not joking.
No, I'm not joking
either.
He
said
it was a good time. What? I'm
not Michael.
He don't think he's in the library. There's all the students who have one. There's one other question.
I'm with you.
There are three holidays that we have to go to Big Hunt Big Dust to give a sacrifice. Big Dust is one of them. Why is Pesach the only holiday of all three that we actually have to remember? Should we be remembering that we walked in the desert for 40 years? Or that it's the birthday of the Torah?
We don't. What do you mean?
It's the history of the Torah. Remember Pesach, not the other two.
Remember the exiting of Egypt.
To the exile.
Remind me, I'll be happy if we discuss that on Thursday night.
Okay.
Can you guys read it? It's large enough print. Yeah?
He she'amda, he she'amda, la'avoteinu ve'lanu, he she'amda, he she'amda, la'avoteinu ve'lanu, she'lo echad bilad, amad aleinu lechaloteinu, she'lo echad bilad, amad aleinu lechaloteinu, ela she'bechol dovado, עומדים עלינו לחלותינו, אלא שבכל דור ודור עומדים עלינו לחלותינו, והקדוש ברוך הוא מצילנו מידם, והקדוש ברוך הוא מצילנו מידם. והיא שעמדה, והיא שעמדה לעלותינו ולנו, והיא שעמדה, והיא שעמדה לעלותינו ולנו, שלא אחד בלבד עמד עלינו לחלותינו, שלא אחד בלבד. Nu lechaloteinu Ela shebechol dovado Omdim aleinu lechaloteinu Ela shebechol dovado Omdim aleinu lechaloteinu Ve'akadosh baruch hu מצילנו מידם והקדוש ברוך הוא מצילנו מידם.
Now do just the tune.
Da na 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 la 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 Amda, verise amda, la dote novenano, shelo echad bilvad, amadaleinu lechaloteinu, shelo echad bilvad, amadaleinu lechaloteinu, ela shebechol dovado, עומדים עלינו לחלותינו, אלא שבכל דור ודור עומדים עלינו לחלותינו, והקדוש ברוך הוא מצילנו מידם, והקדוש ברוך הוא מצילנו מידם.
This is one of the things I tell every person that comes for Gerut, for the Machon. I always tell them, you should know that no one gave us a guarantee as to what the present or the future will hold for us. The only thing we can measure off of is our past. And our past is this so. Our past is that Shebechol Dor Vador, in every generation, Omdim Aleinu, there are people who have risen against us, lechaloteinu, to annihilate us. That is our past. And although the Jewish people as a whole have not been annihilated, many individuals have suffered and been killed. Our history is replete with stories of bloodshed. And I always tell people, I don't know what I would do if I were given a choice. I was born into Judaism. I don't know what I would do if I wasn't. But I can tell you that it's definitely something that a person should consider. Not fun. And at the Seder night, we sing about the fact that God stood by the Jewish people, and the Jewish people as a whole were not annihilated. That's what saved the Jewish people. Time and time again, nations wanted to wipe us out. It began with the story of Mitzrayim. It began earlier. It began with Nimrod trying to wipe out Avram. And then Yitzchak. And then Yaakov. And then the Jewish people in Egypt. And then the Jewish people upon exit of Egypt, and then the Jewish people in the land of Israel, and time again, nations came with a sole intent to wipe us out. And God ensured that it wouldn't happen. But still scary thought. This is a song that I sing in the Agada with chills running down my spine. It's a powerful song. It's about the power of the Jewish people, that God has stood by the Jewish people as a people. But still scary song, because in every generation, people have risen against us to wipe us out. Iran isn't a new threat. Syria isn't a new threat. Everywhere you turn, there are threats. It's not new to the Jewish people. Jewish people have lived their history with threats, and that's this psalm, V'hishamda. He stressed that the one thing that stood by our forefathers and us is the fact that the Holy One, blessed be He, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, saves us from their hand, but saves us is the Jewish people. It's not every individual. Yeah?
Isn't it true that we weren't Jewish people until we went to Mount Sinai? I think Mary said anything. There's a Brit Mila and other Jewish folks. Is that right? So, I mean, when you think Egypt, it wasn't really Jewish. It wasn't really Jewish people. It was only until Sinai. Which went up for 40 days.
Let's say. Why? Let's say. Separate discussion. What our stake was. Yeah. Okay. Tomorrow night we'll Bezrat Hashem have. I want us to focus on the songs, even though I don't think we'll finish the Haggadah. At least we should get to know the songs, and we'll. I know. I have to talk to Rispin. I don't think it makes sense to delay it though. If we delay tomorrow's class to.